Hello, good day, and welcome to the season 4 finale of the Point 99 podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Steve, and this is episode 10. For those new or unfamiliar with the show, firstly, where have you been? But more importantly, what is the Point 99 podcast? Well, we're a running podcast for all runners of all abilities, but especially you, the everyday runner. If you're new to running or to the podcast, we hope to have guests, topics, and discussions that will help you along whatever path your journey is taking. For any seasoned runners or listeners, perhaps we'll have some stories that will have you empathizing with our experiences and predicaments. If it's lessons we've learned during our own journeys, embarrassing stories, or heartstring pulling moments, we hope you'll stick with us while we try to share some good vibes, motivation, and positivity. And hopefully we can have a laugh along the way. That was an oddity, I know, getting the intro done and dusted right away this week without any fluff or additions before it. I hope you've had a glorious week since you heard from me last. Whether, however foul it might have been, I've had a nice chill week. I finally managed to get a week where I've got the out of office on, long lies in bed, and plenty of time to work on getting back out running, toning, and getting stronger. Some of you, or at least those who responded to this week's call to action on where you'd been eventing, park running, or social running over the weekend, have certainly not been slouching though. Season 2, Episode 2 guest Mike Houston, running beyond limits, smashed out a 100km at the ACP in Perth. Lap after lap, this machine whittled down the target and achieved some staggering PBs along the way. Hop on over to his Strava to see those. As always though, Mike's showing us exactly how to activate boss mode. One of the standout favourites from this season for you guys though, and for this exact reason, Jace Wood, the Edinburgh runner, popped his sweet cheeks up to Perth to share the love with Mike and cheer him on as he smashed it over the finish line. Fellow Tony's Chocolonely fan Elaine, or to use her handle, Elaine Runs 82, had a long run with a tall cross park run sandwich. Get yourself down to your local Morrison's, Elaine, if you haven't already, and bag yourself a Tony's Easter egg. Well deserved after that epic 29k effort. A longtime supporter of mine, in fact, one of my very first supporters of my running account and an all-round awesome dude, Matt is running with Solo Running in the Polish countryside. Matt's not long moved over to Poland, so he's having fun finding all the awesome routes and scenery out there. The lovely TJ, I Run for Shirts and Medals, was smashing it, working on her training for her third half marathon this coming May on the always epic Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you, TJ. Hints on a costume run, perhaps, though. Keeping it stateside, we have Season 2, Episode 4 guest and my always awesome and super supportive friend, Patrick Watkins, pwatkins_13. Pat was down smashing the Garden Spot half marathon in some absolutely disgusting looking Pennsylvania weather. Getting it done though, and still smiling at the end as always there, Pat. Another smiley chap and a legend to follow for your Instagram feed squares, McPaul Roadrunner, had the Widnes Trail 5-miler with a few others of the Fartlek family. He says it was muddy, but good fun. Now, I did actually see some photos of that one. A few faces that were not so sure it was good fun mid-run, but smiles all around by the end of it. Great stuff, Paul, and thanks for being a legend and getting involved. The Flying Scotsman himself, AB McCracken, says it was just a wee Livy park run for himself. Consistent running still on the Strava feed around it though, my man. Always looking strong, always flying. Next up, we have Uncle Lee, Control-Alt-Delete, for those not in the know. Now, Lee and the beautiful ladies Geese and Cannon ran the Run the Blades in biblical weather. I think they'll all say it was worth it, though, for that beauty of a spinning medal. Finally, we have Season 3, Episode 4 Scaredy Cat, Chris Evans. Chris said that he had a crap half along main roads for London training, then a social Sunday with some of the EH3-miler crew. Miles are miles though, Chris. I know you've been finding it hard to get the time to properly train for London, but some crap miles are better than none at all. Head high, dude. Come race day, you'll get through it like you always do and smash it over the London finish line. The time will be what the time will be, as long as you have a great time yourself, soak in the atmosphere and keep the faith. At this point, and before I move on to anything else, I want to once again shout out our good friend and season one finale guest, Ryan Miller of the Press Play and Run podcast, better known as Scottish_Runner. Many of you know and follow Ryan and the massive strides he's been making in his abilities recently, while simultaneously juggling family, a top class podcast, work, and a very successful and popular Sunday run club. There's a wonder the man has any hair left. Wait a minute. Yeah, I think that's maybe why he doesn't actually have any hair left. Ryan took himself down to London for a well-timed half marathon effort at the pinnacle of his training for the London Marathon and absolutely smashed it out the park. He had joked beforehand about the Garmin's predicted time for the half he had, but he flew past that with some margin. I dropped into his DMs for a bit of banter and congratulations. After hearing his story on the run-up to Edinburgh last year, he certainly learned a lot of lessons and put even more into practice. But he does say he's hyped for taper right now, as his body is tired. A well-deserved rest once the victory lap is over for sure, before he starts the grind all over again. Big love to Ryan, as always, for being a beacon within the community and an effortlessly genuine legend we can all aspire to be a little bit more like. Keeping on the topic of big race days though, and this week's question. It wasn't quite as popular as I thought it might be, but hey, sometimes you get hits, other times you don't. The question itself was, if you were an elite runner, and I realise that some of you actually are, what would your start line announcement song be? Imagine having a compere introduce you at some big event, like a stadium start line, and you've got to choose a banging track to accompany your introduction. Straight off the bat, we had our sheep whispering shitter, Doug Runs Saudi. He had joked that he should perhaps choose Baba Black Sheep, but opted for a proper classic banger in the form of Bronski Beat's Small Town Boy. He's choosing it not for any running reason, but for its guarantee to get him hyped up, dancing, and taking his mind off the race ahead. Anytime it's on at a public event, you'll see Doug dancing like a mad 1980s post-punk Egypt. Now, Egypt, for anyone that's not Scottish, is, well, I was going to say Dafty, but that's also Scottish. Just an idiot, basically. He's a little embarrassed by that one, but I think it's a blooming great choice and a tune to choose. Season all-star when it comes to not only support all round for the podcast, but always coming in with great answers to the weekly question and what he's been getting up to. Stuart runs a lot, that he does. He joined us once again with a belter of a track. Stuart would have to choose Panic at the Disco's High Hopes. Now that is a positive tune right there. It'll never fail to get the vibes going, hype flowing and feet going. My wife slid into the question box with the Benny Hill theme song. She isn't even joking here either. Nothing will get you ready to run faster than the idea of a dirty old man chasing you down the road, I guess. Another faithful responder to the weekly question, we have the awesome James McQuillan. He says there's something about his choice that gets him raring to go every time, and I think you might agree with this one. AC/DC's Thunderstruck. Stone Cold certified banger right there. Those pre-run vibes would be sky high with this belter around an arena. Finally, we have my delightful pal Geese on the Run with a double header. A safe choice and a good serving of cheese to accompany it. First up, Geese has the Lana Del Rey Cedric Gervais combo in the form of Summertime Sadness, the remix one, of course, as she says. I'm pretty sure I've heard it being blasted out at many an event's warm up. But yeah, it's an undeniable tune right there. Great choice, Giz. Her second choice, well, it is cheese, but it will warm the cockles of anyone like me who grew up with these sorts of songs dominating the airwaves in their youth. Now, everybody get up singing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 will make you get down now. I could have sung that, but I'm going to save you that torture for just now. Geese does say that it's a guarantee to get her running, even if she's feeling totally dead. Thanks to all of you who dropped a choice over. I really appreciate the support and the awesome choices there, gang. To fill the void where I was hoping for many, many more choices, I'll slot in my all-time pre-race choice myself. It's not a super bouncy, happy sounding one by any means, but it gets me focused and ready to get my head down for the job at hand, especially when I don't have my wee pal John White there to talk sense into this solid skull of mine. You'll get bonus points if you can tell me the film it comes from, though, in the form of a lifetime's worth of Strava kudos. My choice, Burn My Shadow by Uncle featuring Ian Ashbery. Well, it's 100% go time when that comes on. It has a vibing bass track and crescendo that never ceases to light my fuse. I have to say, there are so many that I could choose. I love music and the way it can bring people together, lift your spirits on the darkest day, and generally create happiness, much like running and the community, I guess. A little honesty for the second one here and an extra insight into your host. One of my close runners up here, and it's a track that can get me both ready for anything, but also it's a track for those dark days when the head isn't quite playing ball or in the game. I'm pretty sure you all have a track like that though. If you ever see me listening to this one, it's a coin flip as to which it might be. The track, Heavy, featuring Kiara by the legendary Linkin Park, is an all-time favourite of mine. Pre-race or difficult day, it will always do the trick. But enough of that. Let's move on to the meat and bones of today's episode with this week's guest. It was a privilege to have today's guest on with me earlier in the week. I could so easily have listened to the man talk all night, but time is a valuable commodity at the end of the day. There's no wonder he's got such a success rate and is so highly spoken about by his clients that he has worked his magic with so far. I teased in the announcement that he's very similar to the man who helped me kick off this season, Carl Orme, and I wholeheartedly stick by that, as I could always listen to Carl speak for hours whenever the opportunity arises. As another ex-military man and master of the mind, the only difference between the two is that today's guest seems to know a thing or two about training for an event. Now, that's no offence to Carl, but as we learned in episode 1, that's not exactly one of his strong points. Comparison aside, there was some really great chat covering a fantastic origin story and a destination that shows no sign of slowing. Excuse the audio change when it happens. We had a slight technical hiccup while we were chatting, but other than the change in audio, it didn't dampen a great interview. And also ignore the bit about ultra runners in the intro. It'll become clear very quickly as to why I'm saying that as well. He's a well-travelled, well-rounded and highly achieving guy at just 31 who's on a mission to help you become the best version of yourself. He comes highly recommended by our lovely friends over at The Adventure Blether. Can only be one man. The adventure coach himself, Ben Turner. After a season filled with an overwhelming number of ultra runners, I'm overjoyed to be joined today by a man who breaks that trend. As we adventure into a whole different avenue of self-narrative, adventuring. This man's passion is to help other people find their passion and for those working with them to live their most adventurous lives. As a qualified nutritionalist, personal trainer, mountain leader, climbing instructor, and NLP practitioner, or neuro-linguistic programming practitioner, to those of you who may have been scratching your heads, I'm sure we won't be lost for things to talk about. So let's find out a little bit more about this adventurous action man, what makes him tick, and how he can help those out there find their best version of themselves. A name not unfamiliar with our good friends Hannah and Emily over at the Adventure Blether podcast. It's Ben Turner, the adventure coach. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you very much. What a welcome.
I'm stumbling on my words there, but one take. I'm getting better at those.
There's a lot of words in there. That was good. I like it.
I'm trying to keep them shorter as well. That's a short one for me. Have you been having a good day?
It's been great. It's been busy, but it has been good. Busy is better than not busy in my world.
Well, I was going to say, with all the things you've got going on there, you obviously like being a busy man.
I guess it feels productive, right? I like to think, and I'm sure we'll get into the meat and bones of this, but I like to think I'm only 31 and I feel like I've done quite a lot in my life, or at least in my adult life anyway. And I'm never one to sit still. And I guess one of my biggest fears is just stagnating. So I just keep busy and keep busy and keep busy and keep trying to push forward. So yes, busy days are good days. They feel productive and they make me tired at the end of it, which is always a nice thing.
This is going to be one of those conversations that makes me at 37 feel like I've done nothing in my life, and you'll have blown everything out of the water here.
I've been accused. Well, is it accused? I don't know if that's the right word. I've been told by people for whom I've worked for before, lived with before, and known before that I'm a bit of a racehorse. I find something, I apply myself to it, and I just go, and I don't hang about. So I probably... I'm guilty of making myself too busy.
You're making the most out of life. And there's a lot of us out there that maybe don't do enough. And you've only got so many years, you may as well make the most of them.
I think enough is subjective. I do a lot because I know I can handle a lot based on my sort of speed and pace of life and the opportunities I'm very grateful to have. And I think it's not necessarily about making people feel like they're not doing enough. It's making people consider the option that they are far more capable than they think.
Yeah.
Which I think is a slightly different way of thinking about it.
Yeah. That's a good, I like that mentality. I like that the thought process that we've got so much capacity that we don't unlock, that our minds keep us from doing a lot of things that we could be doing. Let's take it back then to start off with the best possible starting point, an introduction to yourself, your background, and kind of deep dive into where your passion for fitness and adventuring has come from. I see from your social media and your website, you love climbing. I mean, that comes from being a leader and rock climber, but you also like cycling as well as all things adventure. So where did it all begin for you?
This is a great question. And it's a story that I do like recalling, and I like that I get asked it on podcasts and things because I feel very grateful. I mean, my parents did an amazing job at doing everything they possibly could. And my mum, especially, because she's just brilliant. So if you listen to this, she's good. I was definitely a short, fat kid when I was a kid once upon a time, and I was afraid of fitness. I never played football. I was terrible at rugby. The only thing I could do in athletics was throw a javelin randomly. I'm still quite proud of the fact that when I was in year 10, I think I could throw a javelin 33 meters, which seemed to be quite far, which was pretty good.
The talent.
And that's kind of it, really. I wasn't much of a runner, but for some reason, I would be off in the woods all the time. All the time. I genuinely wanted to be Ray Mears. My childhood heroes were Ray Mears and Steve Irwin. And honestly, I still do remember the day, and so does my girlfriend who is currently upstairs, remember the day that Steve Irwin died.
Yeah.
And I was like genuinely heartbroken. And I think having that kind of passion and living right in the arse end of nowhere in the countryside, my dad had the ultimate trump card. I never went out to parties and stuff as a kid because he was like, well, I don't want you going off drinking. And if you want to go, the nearest town's 10 miles away, so you better go on your bike. And it was like, I'm probably not going to do that. So I never really did parties and stuff. But I'd be off in the woods with my Ray Mears bushcraft book, the same book that I had since 2001. I actually got it signed at the National Outdoor Expo last year by Ray Mears.
Fantastic.
That was a true highlight of life. And I'd be off in the woods in the dark. In the dark? No, in the woods with the dog. And sometimes in the dark, but with the dog, and camping, building shelters, making fires, you know, catching things, cooking things, the whole standard, I'm going to put a sausage on a stick and toast it over a fire. And it was probably semi-undercooked, so I ate it anyway, and all these different things. And I got involved with like the beavers, the cubs, the scouts, the explorer scouts, the army cadets. And this was just my mum basically feeding opportunity. And she was like, oh, you should try this. And I genuinely remember the first day of Beavers, the first in Cleary Mortimer, the first day of Cubs in Much Wenlock, the first day of Scouts in Much Wenlock, the first day of Adventure Scouts in Coalbrookdale, the first day of Army Cadets in Bridge North. I remember each of those first days being scared, shy, nervous, anxious, feeling sick, feeling like I didn't belong there. And, to an extent, those feelings still remain. We all have them.
Yeah.
And then just thinking, right, I'm going to make the most of this. And Scouts, very outdoorsy, Adventure Scouts, very outdoorsy. But it was when I started doing the Army Cadets that my color sergeant, so my detachment commander, said, hey, we've got this adventure training course coming up. And it was like, it was my first week. And he was like, but it's in like a month's time. It's in a month. It's in, 4 weeks' time. And it's in Scotland. Do you want to go? And I'm like, what's adventure training? And it's like, oh, it's like rock climbing. And, we're going to do some canoeing and some mountaineering. And I was like, yeah, sounds great. Okay. Said to my mum, can I do it? It's going to cost this much. It's a week. Can I go? And my mum was like, of course you can. Let's do it. So I got booked in. And Tony Wakeman, that was his name. He was the detachment commander. And he said, right, okay, cool, we'll go. And we went to this place in Feshiebridge in the Cairngorms. And it's an RAF-owned adventure training center that we used as cadets. And it was just brilliant. We're just every day out canoeing. And my color sergeant was the canoe instructor. And I just remember bonding to him mostly because I wanted to just be him. He was such a cool guy. He was so inspirational and just a role model that you don't know is a role model. You're not looking for a role model, but someone you just feel like you're gelling with. And I picked up canoeing pretty quickly. And I was like, what else can I have a go on my own? Because you had two people in a canoe. And he was like, yes, you need to do the J stroke. You need to try the Indian stroke. And I'm like researching this. And I'm like looking in his book as he's going through it. And I'm like, this is cool. I want to have a go at this. What about the wind? Da, 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 da. And after a week, I ended up just canoeing all week because I was just helping. I was like, can I help deliver the one star qualification? Can I help do this with you? Because this is really fun for me. And I got to the end. And then the guy who was in charge of all of the Army cadets for that thing, like quite a high up rank, Major Salt, his name was. Again, somebody who straightened out my brother. And if you can straighten out my brother, you can cure world peace. And he said to me, it was like, I hear you've been really, really helpful to Color Wakeman. You're only here for a week. I would like you. I've been an Army cadet for 3 weeks at this point, by the way. I would like you to stay free of charge for the second week. You're going to have to camp outside in Color Wakeman's tent, which he will give you because there's no accommodation for you. But I would like you to stay and I want you to help with the development of the canoeing instructor and all the rest of it in capacity of Color Wakeman. And I'm like, oh my God. I also want you to be acting company sergeant major.
Wow.
And I'm like, amazing. What's that? And they're like, oh, okay, right. So, you have certain ranks and company sergeant major. I want you to be getting everyone on parade. And I'm like, what the hell's parade? Okay, cool. You need to get, be in charge of timings and making sure everyone's together and basically giving me loads of responsibility that they didn't want to have, which is what I can see it for now. But it was just like, I remember feeling so proud that I was like, oh my God, like I've made a bit of an impression. I'm doing this thing. And I remember genuinely the first day getting everyone out on parade. I didn't know what parade was. I didn't know what to do when Major Salt walked out. You need to bring everyone to attention. How the hell do you bring everyone to attention? And I'm like, I could hear people whispering. The hell is this guy? He's only been here 5 minutes, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sod it. Do you know what? I don't care. And you're just bringing people up to attention and you're like, good. I'm making a fool of myself, but I was just enjoying it. And this is a really long story, I know, but it just started this like, I said yes to doing things. Sod it. I'm going to keep doing it. And I never intended on joining the army, but I did join the army. And this just started a journey of adventure training. Like I was the weird guy that in GCSE PE, when everyone's doing their assignments on football, tennis, hockey, rugby, you basically had to do like a full instructional project of how to do your sport. So some people would be like, this is how you play football, the warm up and all the rest of it, the drills and whatever. I still know nothing about football. And I was like, I want to do rock climbing. And they were like, no one's ever done rock climbing before. And I was like, great, I want to do it on video because I can't really write down how to rock climb. I need to video it. And my brother and my dad helped me and I was doing it. And the guy, the teacher who was heading up the class was like, this is the best assignment for this project I've ever seen. And I want to keep it as an example for people to follow in the future. And I was like, that's amazing. And it's just opportunities that seem to have come by me just being a bit weird. Like I wasn't a normal kid. I was always out in the fields climbing trees and doing things like it just started something. And I joined the army. I was like, okay, there's more opportunity here, because I did loads of adventure training with the cadets, and started getting qualifications: mountain leader, canoe instructor, rock climbing instructor, caving leader randomly, alpine mountain leader, global expedition leader. And you know, you're getting all these things, and I'm thinking, this is pretty cool. Like, I'm doing more of this than I am my actual normal job, which I didn't really like that much. So, winner. And that led to expedition after expedition after expedition. Go to the Himalayas, go to South Africa, to the Drakensberg Mountains, go lots of the Alps, to Tajikistan, to the jungle, to lots in Scotland, lots in the UK, Norway. And just before I left the army, I was meant to be on an expedition to do the first British Army ascent of the North Ridge of Everest. But because it was incredibly expensive for the army, they mothballed it. And I've just found out, I left the army in 2018. And one of my old friends, who is a much higher instructor than me, is the one guiding it. And it's happening, I think he said this year or next year. I want to say this year. May is the Everest season, I think. It's happening this year. So A, it goes to show how much it was delayed by, but B, it goes to show the opportunities that are available. And I fed off it. And then the whole fitness thing kind of started. Well, I was not fit when I joined the army. Like, I did the mile and a half run. I actually failed push-ups getting into the army. But because they messed up the paperwork, I couldn't get 44 push-ups. And I think I did like 38. And because they messed up the paperwork, it got lost and they just put it as 44 anyway. So I got into the army. Hooray. And then started running. I wasn't a very good runner at all. And I just started doing more training because I became obsessed with joining the SAS. And it was the SRR first when I was 20 years old. And I had one attempt at their selection course, realized I was 20 years old still, very immature. I was an immature 20-year-old. Didn't really like the idea that I was doing a six-month course without really knowing anything about this regiment. It's very secretive. They don't tell you anything in training. It was tough. I was immensely proud of myself to getting through the first phase of that training because it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my entire life at that point. But still the right idea to have been like, I'm not ready for this. And that was fine. Then the next year I started reading up about the SAS and I was like, hang on, there's loads more information about the SAS. I know lots about it now. I'm reading all the books. I became fully obsessed. Attempt number one, I fell over a tree and broke my knee, which isn't great. And then they invited me back for attempt number three. And by the time I was 3 years into training for this, I was getting towards what was either going to be a decision point of adventure training instructor, SAS operative, or leave the army. And I'd done a lot of adventure training instruction, and I was on this course. And I became so exhausted by... No, that's not the right term. I think I just lost the reason as to why I was doing it. I realized that I was there to be absolutely battered, physically battered, by people I really respected. Like, these people are cool. When an SAS man comes in to the room, he has an aura about him. And I wanted that aura. I fed off it. And you know, when you're training for the SAS, you walk with a bit more swagger because you are training for something that's freaking cool. You're applying yourself to something that's really hard. And I was so proud of my preparation for it. I was supremely fit by my standards. And I started entering ultramarathons, and I'd run it with a 25 kilo rucksack. And, you know, after I'd done the fifth one, I wasn't coming last, which I was still amazed by. And I just thought, I'm feeding off this. This is great. And I said to the instructor, I don't know if I'm here for the right reasons, because I don't really want to kick indoors and shoot people in the face, which is kind of what everyone thinks that the SAS do.
Didn't laugh at that.
I kind of feel like I'm just here to get absolutely thrashed by you, because I want, like, I can't think of the word. What's the word you're looking for? Well, you're looking for, it's not confirmation, but you're looking for, it's not recognition either. I can't think of the word.
People I think I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I don't know the word for it at the moment, but I think I know what you mean.
It's like an affirmation that you're here and you mean something, and what you're doing is the right thing. And I was like, I'm getting this from this course. And it was like, fair enough. I think you're going to leave the army now. So come back for the reserves. You've got an open invitation whenever you want. I'm like, all right, fair enough. And I went home and I was like, I think I can become an adventure training instructor full time. There's a post for it in North Wales. And I was like, I'm in. I need to do it. I knew the person who was the commanding officer. I said, look, I want this position. I've got the qualifications. I'm here. I'm supremely highly qualified. Let's go. And he was like, you're right, I want you here. And my unit unfortunately blocked it. It's a very small unit. And they were like, oh, we need the people. And I was like, well, if I don't get this, I am going to leave because I'm at that point where I'm not trapped by pension. So you're going to lose me either way. And they still dug their feet in. So I left. And actually, that started a really interesting chapter in my life, which I will draw to a close. This is a very long story, isn't it?
It's a great story. No, you can continue for as long as you want.
But I left the army in 2018. Well, I signed off from the army in 2017. It takes a year to leave, right? And then I was like, I need to do something to mark the end of this. I want to do a challenge. This sounds fun. You know, I've done ultramarathons with my Bergenon. That's mental. And I thought I would take it one step further and try and actually run a race. So I did the Glencoe Sky Race. And I was like, I wonder what else I could do. The Sky Race was, at that point, the hardest thing I'd ever done. And I was like, I wonder what else I can do. And that was the common denominator. I was like, right, I'm going to climb a 20-foot gym rope 731 times until I get the cumulative height of the National Three Peaks Challenge. And for those who are doing the quick maths, it's not 20 times 731. I started on 20, and then my arms got so dead that I had to drop to 15 feet and then just can up the reps a little bit until I got to the distance. But it was freaking hard, really hard. And I have never been so sore the next day ever. Like, from fingertips to the tips of my toes, you know, you get DOMS. Well, this is like DOMS on steroids times a million. And I physically couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't bend my body. I had to get pulled up and maneuvered around. It was mental, but I did it, and did it in 12 hours. The whole point was, it was roughly half the height of Everest, and somebody, Ross Edgley, had done the height of Everest in a rope in 24 hours. And I got him to help me with my training, and it was really cool. He was really, really helpful. And I was like, well, I don't want to copy what you've done, but I reckon I could do half the distance in half the time. Seems fun. So we did, and that was really, really good fun. And then it was like, I'm now leaving the army, so let's think of something to mark that. Iceland. I need to go to Iceland. And I want to ride my bike all the way around it. I'm going to get a gravel bike. I'm going to ride all the way around Iceland, but I want to do something new. I don't want to just do the ring road because that's boring. I might as well go and ride the M25. It's a horrible road, by the way. If anyone's considering going to Iceland, don't cycle the
road. It's just the M25.
It's freaking awful. So I thought, I'll go all the way around the outside, all the way into the Central Highlands. And I was like, this is it. 3,500 kilometers. Let's do it. Planned it, went. Total naivety. Ross Edgley says, naive enough to start, stubborn enough to finish. That was the definition of that trip. I started and I was like, ooh, my first day was 200 kilometers. That was a long way to do on a heavy bike in wind. But that trip was this, honestly, to this day, did include the single most amazing experience of my entire life. And this is where the adventure coach was born, because I want people to experience exactly this. Now, I was 10 days in, over 1,000 kilometers in, and I was toast. I was really tired. It was hot, surprisingly. It was summer. I was getting a proper tan on. I was coming through the West Fjords, which, if you're looking at a map of Iceland, it's the like lots of fjords on the northwest side. Most incredible place in the world. On what I thought was going to be the most boring stretch of it, because you're constantly going in and out and in and out. And every time you're coming in through one of these fjords, just miles long, you can see across the water the road you've got to cycle to come out of it. And I thought, this is going to be soul destroying. But actually, every single one of those fjords had a personality of its own and new views and just new things. It was just incredible. And I was cycling along on the drops, just head bobbing away. I'm like, I am tired. I couldn't afford to eat that much food because everything was so expensive. So I was definitely malnourished. I lost about 10 kilos over the month, eating like the Iceland version of pasta and sauce, bell peppers, because they were quite cheap, cheese, blueberries, like whatever I could, really. It didn't really matter at that stage. It didn't really matter what I was eating. It just needed calories. And I was tired. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. I'm not enjoying this anymore. This is just, my legs are hurting. And at this point where I was like, I need to stop. I've got to get my campsite. I've got to get set up. I just need to sleep for a bit. I just heard this sound, and this is the experience. This is what I want people to experience. This is why I do what I do. I was at that point where I was naive enough to start, stubborn enough to finish, like Ross Edgley says, right? I had created this adventure. I had trained for the adventure. I had cycled loads. I had got the bike squared away. I had designed parts of the bike. Like my local bike shop really squared me away with helping this machine. I was building myself as a machine. I had gone through peaks and troughs. I'd cried. I'd nearly died. I'd got into some serious trouble. I'd had some amazing experiences. I'd had the CEO of Coca-Cola of Iceland offer to come and pick me up in his helicopter. Like I'd had some really cool things happen, right? And then at a point where I was like, why am I bothering with this? No one cares. Why am I here? I'm really tired. Am I getting bored of this? Shall I just go home? And I'm cycling on this road, and to the left, about 10 meters away, is the sea on this Millpool fjord in sunshine. Not any type of sunshine, that kind of 3 p.m. sunshine, just before golden hour. Still warm, still day, still sea, no one around for hours, not miles, hours. And cycling along. And I was there, and I was going through this internal monologue. And I'm like, fuck this. It's not good enough. Like, I shouldn't be here. This is boring. Like, I'm getting tired. Why am I bothering with this? What's the point? No one cares. I'm not some TV personality. I'm not some celebrity, blah, blah, blah. And then I just heard, what the hell is that? And I looked to my left, and the edge of the water was about 10 meters away. So, about 30 meters away were a pod of humpback whales, and they were breaching the water next to me. And I could hear these blowholes come, and then the inhale after, which I'd never heard ever, but I didn't even know it was a thing. It's kind of obvious when you say it like that, isn't it, really? Yeah. But they have to inhale at some point, right? And I just looked up, and hair just stood on end immediately. And I'm like, this is incredible. And they're moving the same pace as me in the same direction on this road that runs parallel with the sea for freaking miles. I was like, this is amazing. And I'm just like, mouth open, pedaling along, and all of a sudden I had a bit of energy, and I was like, I'm gonna pedal, I'm gonna move with these whales, because it's insane. I've never seen anything like this before. This is one of the most unbelievable things that ever happened. And I was like, if I get my camera out, because I'm trying to fumble around with the quad locks trying to get my phone off, I was like, they're gonna go, because they're not here for me, obviously. It just so happens that we're in the same position together, but we're moving parallel. If I stop, they're gone. If I look through my phone, I might miss them. And I'm like, just like trying to get the phone up. And it's like, I think this is just meant to be for me. Just this one moment, just it. And I was like, okay, fine. Put the phone away. And then I get to tell the story. Whenever anyone asks me about Iceland, I'm going to tell them this very story. And for about 6 kilometers, 5 kilometers, they stuck with me all the way. I was like, this really is amazing. And it sounds, I don't know, not being in that moment now, this is the only part of this story that sounds a bit odd and a bit like cliche and a bit woo-woo, so just bear with me. But it was almost like at that one point where I was like, what's the point? It was like Iceland itself was just saying, just keep going.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone's going to really understand what that means until they're in that point. And I was like, okay, I'll keep going. And then it was only about 10 or 20K or so to go until I was camping, like, where I wanted to camp. And I just kept going. And it was a wild camping spot that night. So I was actually on the side of the shore. And I was like, that was just, they stuck with me for 5 or 6K, and it was the most incredible thing. And the only way I could have done that was by building a body that could deal with it. Like, I'm not jacked. I'm not super muscular. I don't look like Ross Edgley. I'm not built like the mountain. I'm not a gymnast athlete. There's a six pack under a layer of pizza because I like pizza. I will tell you how to fuel perfectly a body for adventure to deal with everything, and so that you can still have coffee and cake at the end of it. I will show you how to train your body to do anything you want it to do in the mountains or on two wheels or with four, you know, two hands and 2 feet. Like, I can show you how to do that. Your body will put up with it. And just being able to go through those processes that I've learned from tons of mistakes and some successes, I've managed to figure out a way of doing it. And it's not just about doing bicep curls and squats in the gym. Like, it's the mental side. It's going to that point of being like, Ben, why are you even here? You're not good enough. And just dealing with it. And that was something that really hit home. And I was like, I need to do something else after this. So I ran 16 marathons in 16 days in all 16 national parks. The keen listeners among us would be like, oh, excuse me, there's 15 national parks. There is, you're right. But the 16th was for the launch of the London National Park City. So I started in the Cairngorms, worked my way down all 15. Please don't make me reel them all off because I can't think. I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember all of them.
I mean, the easy one is Scotland, but we may have more to, hopefully.
Exactly. I mean, we've got Cairngorms and Loch Lomond, right? So we're looking at a third at some point soon. But yeah, all the way down the country. I started in the Cairngorms. Funny story, a snowstorm was following me all the way down the country until I got to the North York Moors, and that was genuinely in the snow. You know, got bursitis in my knees, which made running really hard. It was horrible. And I wanted to celebrate the London National Park City being launched because I thought it was a phenomenal idea. You know, we're looking at preserving and celebrating all the green spaces in cities. Very, very important thing. Mm-hmm. Daniel Rayville Ellison did a fantastic job at promoting that. And I was like, I want to celebrate that by running all these marathons. And I ran the marathon in London. It wasn't the London Marathon, but it was something that Daniel put together for me to celebrate the London National Park City and trails in London. And then ended in... I can't remember the place in London, but it's just next to the National Natural History Museum, whatever part of London that is, to literally finish the marathon, walk straight into their launch do event thing, and then do a talk about marathons, not marathons, about national parks. So that was a very cool thing. And I was like, I wonder what else I can do, because I'm building something that you know, a body and a mind that can do stuff. And I was like, right, Cape Wrath Trail. That's going to be the hardest thing. 231 miles of uber remote Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the epitome of an adventure. Hard, in the arse end of nowhere, Scotland, no help. No one's coming. On my own, self-supporting, going into a complete mental cave. And I could not wait. And I was training like an absolute savage. I was living on the west coast of Scotland at the time, just down the road from Fort William. So just down the road from the start of the trail, I was in it. I was in the matrix. It was incredible. Up until the 28th of March, 2020, which for those among us will know, the day that lockdown was called. And I was due to be doing that run Easter weekend. And I was like, that's fine. It'll be a weekend. This whole short-term COVID thing, be a couple of days. And everyone thought it was going to be a couple of days. And then, you know, 2 years later, we were out of lockdowns. But because of that, things happened. You know, I had to change locations, redundant from jobs and that sort of thing. I had to move to to England and down to Shropshire. And the Cape Wrath Trail still hasn't happened yet because life has. But it's been a process of actually maybe that was the thing that I needed to have happen so that I could build the business of the adventure coach. Going back to the Iceland story, I want people to have like visceral adventurous experiences like that in their life at least once. And to do that, most stumbling blocks of people, fitness, quality of food / weight, overall health, and a weak mind. And also, how the hell do I do it? How do I not get lost? How do I not die? Like, these are legit things that people will think. I was like, the adventure coach, this needs to happen. I need to train people to be fit for adventure. I need to go through Nutrition 101, and I'll tell you everything you need to know about nutrition. Majority of stuff you hear on social media is rubbish, by the way. I'm going to throw that out there. I have figured it out. I figured out the matrix, not for my own sense, otherwise I'd be a million followers. The reason I'm not is because I don't bullshit about things that are clickbaity and things that are reactive. If you look at people like Eddie Abu and they're saying, hey, you don't need this, you just need to do this. If you've got someone else who's going into a supermarket with a doctor's lab coat on saying, kale, don't eat kale, just eat sheep. And you're like, no, a lot of these things are missing the point. So we need to go through Nutrition 101 because we need to be level-headed with our approach to food because it is genuinely simple. Not always easy to implement, but simple to understand. And then we need to go through mindset. And I've called it rooting resilience. We need to root some resilience into our brain so that we can deal not just with when the weather closes in on the mountain, but how to deal with relationship problems, the dog annoying you, work getting on top of you, stress, losing loved ones. Mm-hmm. All those things that happen in life need resilience. COVID's taught us that. And COVID taught us that a lot of us don't have any. And in the world, according to Ben, from the world that has been forged in army adventure training. Bearing in mind the whole point of army adventure training is to put people into an uncomfortable, unpredictable environment so that they can be better prepared to go to battle. We need to have, as civilians, an answer to building resilience in an adventurous setting, which is where I think everyone needs to be, spending more time outdoors, embracing a bit of nature, and learning how to do it. So if you can get fit, healthy, mentally tough, and adventurously competent, then that's where I want to leave people. And I was like, this is the thing I need to do. And going through that process, yes, keeping on top of fitness and development, and I've got some really exciting goals coming up for this year and into next year, but it's just given me the opportunity to form that business. So to answer the question of how did I get into fitness, there is a what was probably a 15-minute rant of my entire life.
That was spot. I love that. I could listen to that. I could listen to you talk forever on that. And I don't know whether that's because I've got a huge respect for the military. I was a military child. My dad's in the military. So I've got a huge respect for anyone that goes into that style of life in the first place. Then the strength of mind to put yourself into situations, to have the Icelandic experience where anyone of a more spiritual nature might go, that was a higher being's way of telling me not to throw in the towel. Now, I'm not a spiritualist myself. And as you said, that was Iceland's way of telling you, you're not done yet. There's still a lot more to see. That's phenomenal. Your website does say, though, that strength of mind is and like you said there, one of the key factors of something that you will help a person like myself or anyone listening learn to develop, to go, you know what, I am capable of doing these things, even if you don't believe it yourself. So no, I think that's a fantastic story about where you've come from, and from coming from that little fat kid to the point where, and I'm going to have to rewrite that intro now to say I've come from ultra runners. You just slapped me in the face there as well, Ben. That's not good. Oh, you're like the ultra runner of ultra runners so far this season.
I don't know about that. I've done a little bit of running, but I'm not sure if I'm a seasoned ultra runner.
You're way too humble. The amount of marathons as well. But definitely at the age of, you said 31, that is a phenomenal amount of things to accomplish in that space of time. And now to be teaching other people that they too can experience similar things, because everyone's experiences are going to be a whole lot different, like you say, depending on where you're adventuring, who you're adventuring with, the sights and sounds that you see will be different wherever you're doing it. How has the coaching gone one-on-one with people then? Have you had much feedback from people to say their experience in these things? How has the feeling been so far?
So the coaching journey has taken a interesting sort of evolution. I first started out when I got my nutrition qualification. I was like, hey, I can do this. Funnily enough, I did the course just for my own knowledge because I wanted to apply it to my own development because I was doing these challenges at the time. And I was like, yeah, I need to learn this for myself. And then it taught me how to deal with clients. And I was like, hang on a minute. I can help people doing this. This is great. And as any good coach, their mum is probably going to be the first client. And my mum was. And I knew she was dubious. And she was like, I'm just doing it because this is my son and I love him. And, you know, we've got a menopausal woman who couldn't lose weight and didn't want to do exercise or hadn't considered doing exercise because she was asthmatic. And then she lost, you know, 5 kilos and started running and did her first trail 5K and 10K, you know, within the year. And it was just like, bloody hell, my mum's amazing. I need to work with more people. And it was an evolution of who to work with and how to work with them. So first of all, it was just nutrition consulting. And then it was outdoor. I did outdoor, what am I trying to say? outdoor fitness classes, like a boot camp, around Shrewsbury for a little while, and in Ellesmere. And then I was like, okay, I'm working with those people. And then I was like, I feel like people need a bit more of an in-depth thing. So I'm going to offer an online coaching solution and see if this works. And then people started doing that. And I was like, okay, cool. This is interesting. People are getting there. Now I'm finessing who it is I want to work with. What's the niche, as the business coaches will say? You know, who is it that I'm dealing with? Who am I working with? And then I was like, well, there's no common denominators. You know, I'm not working with women aged 35 to 37 who want to lose 30 pounds of fat. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm thinking, well, the common denominator here is adventurous people who know they need to do more. They want to do more. They get to the point where they feel exactly what I felt at some point and multiple times in my life. There must be more than this. I'm like, And these people are going to vibe with my adventurous approach to things, because I'm encouraging people to get outside more and I'm showing people how to get into mountains. They're going to vibe with that. If you're a road running marathoner or somebody who's doing a couch to 5K and just wants to road, do pavements, I'm probably not the right person for you. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who is like, I need to do something and the idea of climbing a mountain scares me and excites me, then I am your man. If you're someone who is looking to go off and do something mental, like I've started working with people who are taking on the marathon Desarb. I've worked with people who are taking on their first 5K. And the common denominator of these people is they are open-minded enough to embrace getting outside and doing stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the overall sort of genesis of it and the development. And, you know, you end up, funnily enough, today, while we're recording this, I've had a few closing calls for people who have graduated from my coaching program. And a couple of things that they've said, which I'll read out here, is, well, one person said, which is absolute music to my ears, because this is what I am all about when it comes to people developing. I have done something that has taught me how to do it myself. That's what it's all about. In a world country, Ben, I never want to see you again. And I mean that in the best way possible. And I mean that in the same way that you've probably never called your driving instructor ever again to say, excuse me, how do I drive?
Yeah.
You've passed your test. You've done what you need to do. You learn how to drive and you crack on. And you come to me, you work through the process. We either do a more basic approach or we do a more in-depth approach. The more in-depth approach is for people who know exactly what it is that they want and they're training for something specific. The lesser approach is for everybody else who just want to be adventure ready and fit for adventure, or healthier and generally better. And at the end of those processes, you will get to the point where you say, hey, you've taught me everything I need to know, and I now know exactly how to do it myself. That everything that we're doing has become a way of life. That I have started listening to myself. Things that I will say over and over and over again, which I definitely need to get printed on t-shirts, that becoming over achieving. Mm-hmm. Becoming is far more important than what you achieve. 10% of a workout is better than no workout.
Yeah.
I have taught independence, not dependence, because I want you to be able to independently and autonomously move on and do your thing from there with everything you need to know. You know, people will outright say to me at the end, you know, we're coming towards the end of our program, like, how do I develop my own programs? How do I do this? I want to be able to do this myself. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all in for that. And that's what we're going to cover now. So when it comes to it, a lot of people don't expect so much of a mental shift. But that is the part where I think I am most excited about. You can go onto ChatGPT and type in, excuse me, can I please have a training program for a 31-year-old man who can run a 10K in 50 minutes and I would like to run up a hill? And it will generate you a 12-week program. You can do that, no problem. You can go onto ChatGPT and say, excuse me, how do I eat healthily? And it will give you something that the internet says, and that's fine. The information isn't what people necessarily need. It's the implementation. And the implementation is in the rewiring and the deep dive into mindset, figuring out why you're trying to do the thing that you're trying to do, why you want to see the improvement, and most importantly, why you can't do it yourself. When we dive into that, we figure out what the barriers are. We figure out what the hurdles are. And then from that point, we address them one at a time until by the end of it, we've had quite an emotional journey. And a lot of people who have worked with me will attest to that. It can be an emotional and deep journey, but you learn far more about yourself and you feel like you were in a better place in life than when you started. That is what coaching is all about. Coaching isn't all about, to me, coaching isn't all about rippling six-pack abs. I don't train bodybuilders. I'm here to train people who want confidence, competence, and a little bit more self-belief. And that comes with training fitness, developing nutrition and health, rewiring the mind, and being competent and confident enough to be able to go out into the mountains on your own.
And you've got the lived experience to help you along the way as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's always developing, and I've done, I feel like I've got a certain level of confidence to be, and naivety to just be like, I'm going to go off and do that on my own anyway.
Yeah.
And that is a relatively unique thing, I think. So that helps, but it also helps me then develop that in other people.
I think you covered something interesting there, which I know as a guest and the topics that I usually have on with people, you're slightly different to the norm, but you mentioned something there. It was very striking for me, was independence instead of dependence. And it's something I see quite a lot on social media, especially in the running community at the moment. People have a dependency on running. They're on different apps, or they see what other people are doing and they have a dependency. I have to run because that person's run today, or I have to do this event because that person's doing this event. There seems to be an awful lot of fear of missing out, dependencies of that person's doing it, ergo I must do it as well, otherwise I don't fit in. And it's sometimes, from my perspective, I am a little bit more independent. I look at my own training, I write my own programs, and I do what's best for me. I only ran once last week. And yeah, in my head, I'm going, I would like to do X amount of kilometers every week. But at the same time, I know life's busy and I'll get round to it. And I'm going to go for a run after we're done today. And you sometimes look at everyone else and go, am I the oddity here? Am I wrong because I'm independent? Because I'm not striving to go running 4 or 5 times a week? Are other people looking at me going, well, he's obviously not much of a runner, not really into his fitness if he's not doing it. So it's really, it does really strike a chord with me to hear that it is more about independence than dependency. Because sometimes you look at this whole environment and the whole community and go, I'm not quite sure here. I'm not really sure. Mm. As you've kind of gone forward then, and you've talked about the coaching, you talked about everything you can bring to people. We spoke about this just before because you did have something that you wanted to bring to the show today. And I think this is a good opportunity to kind of populate the discussion with that particular topic. So you're just wrapping up your current intake of clients, and you're now looking to bring in a new batch of people that work not only for themselves, but work for you as well. It's not just a case of taking in anyone. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And I think before I do, I just wanted to readdress a point on the dependence and independence thing. I think you're absolutely right. And I feel like there's a really important message to be said there. I think there's going to be a lot of people who are listening to this, or at least certain people who I've seen in my circles and social medias that do use a lot of dependence to competition in training, i.e. not just competition in race, but competition in people. I've seen so-and-so run, so therefore I need to run. And as much as there is a lot of use to that, equally, we need to understand, the first thing I'm going to say to anybody is, why did you bother even starting? Not to put them off, but to put them on so that they know what the core reason was that they wanted to run, or they wanted to train, or they wanted to hike or climb or get on a bike. What was the reason? Because you play the handy given. We all have different lives. You've got a very different life to me. I've got a very different life to every single one of my clients. And I'll say that through and through. I'm not coaching you to be like me at all in any way, shape, or form. What I'm saying here is it's very, very important to understand what is the core reason for you starting. Did you start because the first day you got on a mountain bike, just something clicked in your brain and you were like, this is it for me. This is amazing. This is the thing that I want to do. Did you start running because you hiked a mountain and thought, I could run this? And maybe I did run a little bit of the trail and I was like, I fell alive. Did you start running because you had something mentally that you were just dealing with and running worked for you? And it's taken you to places you never thought you could even dream of. Are you part of a group of friends that just so happened to start running because they decided to one day and did a park run. And actually, this is really good. I feel good after running, and therefore I like running. You know, it's understanding that, not going onto social media, onto everybody's highlight reel, which is what it is, and saying, "Ah, oh, Steve's been for a run today and I haven't, so therefore I'm a failure. So-and-so's been out on the bike today and I haven't been out the bike in 4 weeks, so therefore I'm not doing very well." Perfect example, but I say it quietly because she's upstairs, but my girlfriend. So
we did an Anchorage 10K, okay? And wasn't much running done beforehand. Yeah, we did some strength and conditioning and, you know, we were fit and strong and in a great place. And she ran, felt good, ran some more, ran some more, ran some more. Got to the end and thought, oh, that was exhausting. You know, that was terrible. It was really, really hard. We looked at the stats, second fastest 10K she'd ever done. And the previous fastest was at her peak of training last year, after a full summer of training for someone who really loves summer, and got through the whole thing within 4 seconds of her PB, which I'd say was pretty darn good, but went through the process of being very sort of conscious of friends who were running and she wasn't running and kind of felt like she was going into this a failure and it was all going to go wrong. And all I said was just remember why you're doing it in the first place and run your own race. You run your own race, you have a great time. So I think you're right. You know, the whole point of independence, not dependence, is multiple levels. It's independence for yourself, but it's also independence from coaching processes. Because I see people who come coaching process after coaching process after coaching process. You know, they come to me as the 10th coach they've been with.
Yeah.
Who are dependent on coaching, dependent on training programs. And I make it so that you know how to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, that brings me on to, and thank you very much for the offer there, to share what it is that I'm working on. You know, the Adventure Readiness Challenge is my main thing that I like to work with people for. I do one-to-one coaching where we go in depth with certain people, but it's not for everybody. It's for people who have got a specific goal they're looking for. So I created the Adventure Readiness Challenge for everybody else. 12 weeks guided coaching of training. You can either do it in the gym or you can do it at home. And I have 3 levels of training. You're either beginner, intermediate, or expert. And that will tailor the training for you. 12 weeks of training, 12 weeks to get a grip of everything you need to know about nutrition. And I will teach you one new thing each week. And by the end of it, you'll know everything you need to know. Everything you need to know. And that is a promise. And then mindset. And we work through mentality. We work through your mindset. We work through your motivations, your confidence, and everything else that we need to work on in order to develop a mentally stronger, more resilient, more confident, and capable version of you. And then adventure skills. All the basics you need to know. Some people will know the basics, in which case this will reaffirm what they know, which is amazing because everybody needs some retraining.
Yeah.
If you've never done it before, it's going to give you the confidence to go out and do your first thing. And I've had some people who have completed that and gone out for their first solo wild camp, male and female, solo wild camp, their first solo adventure, their umpteenth solo adventure, but they've made it a little bit harder maybe or a little bit different. And that's how I run that coaching process. It is something I am incredibly proud of. And I've developed this next one, so the April intake, to have a new element of this rooting resilience. The rooting resilience side is really going deep on the mental resilience side. And I'll be quite honest with you, the reason for that is because I've had an absolutely terrible previous 12 months where my entire personal life went down the toilet. Mm-hmm. And I've learned an awful lot from that. And I want to implement that into this rooting resilience side so that people are able to deal with life as it comes. It's not just about dealing with, you know, the pain cave of training. It's about dealing with everything else that happens. So the intake for that is opening mid this week. So coming into the beginning of April. And then the intake will run for 3 weeks before we then go good to go by the third week in April. So we're looking at the calendar. Let me just pull it up. We are looking to start on the 15th of April. So from there, that's when I'll start the new challenge, and it's 12 weeks. And then by the end of it, we'll all go for a hike up a most likely Welsh mountain. And then go for coffee and cake after. So it's something I want to feel like people can just join as a complete beginner or somebody who is, you know, they've done some training and they feel like they're more than a beginner of training, but they can progress. That's why I give it the different levels. But somebody who wants to like completely transform health, fitness, mindset, and adventure skill set, this is the
point. So this comes out on Friday. So this is today is effectively Friday. So the doors are now open. The best way for anyone interested to get in contact with you.
So the best way is, as part of this, renewing of the Adventure Readiness Challenge and dealing with some of the aforementioned previous stresses of the last 12 months, is I have started a new Instagram account, which I am putting all of my attention into, which is Ben Turner Adventure. The Ben Turner Coach page will be closed, and then the Ben Turner Adventure Coach Ben Turner Adventure is where I'm at. So Instagram, Ben Turner Adventure. I'm pretty sure the profile picture is me looking relatively happy in a yellow jacket, but it's fairly self-explanatory. Just DM me there. If you just say that you've been on, you've listened to Steve's podcast and you thought, hey, this guy seems to have something that I vibe with or was not boring, then please do let me know. And from there, I can give you all the details.
And even if they miss the, because a lot of people might tune in after the fact, if they miss this current onboarding, there will be future onboardings. If they drop you a DM, you can add them to a mailing list or contact list.
So once they're, if you miss it, and that's absolutely cool, there'll be another one in July. And then the next one after July will be September, because September works like lovely to go up to Christmas. Yep. So there'll be another two intakes this year after this one. There's equally, I do adventure retreats. So we do weekend long adventure retreats and workshops and things in the mountains in Scotland, England, and Wales. So there's a bunch of stuff we can do. Just reach out and say, hey, I'd love to start a conversation. And if there's something I can do to help you, if there's anything you want from me, I've got a bunch of free resources I can throw to you. It's not all about a sales pitch. I'm just here to help people do more cool things.
And even if you just want to hear a good story around a campfire as well.
Damn right. Absolutely.
What's next then, as we look to wrap up, on the cards for yourself as Ben Turner, though? You spoke about and used an important word, the Cape Wrath. You said it's not happened yet. What's next on the cards for yourself?
Cape Wrath is one of those things that hasn't left my mind for a long time, but I think it's going to be a 2025 challenge. This year, I've got the Ultra Trail Snowdonia in what is now about 48 days, in the 11th of May. After that, I am trying to book the time to do some European sky running, which is where you run on some really high alpine mountains. But the biggest event, I think, of this year is Voom have thought it was a very good idea to sponsor me a place for the 13 Valleys Ultra. So 180 kilometers, honestly, not looking forward to it, but 180 kilometers in the Lake District in October. And it's a daunting amount of training, but it's going to be a good laugh and we're going to make a good go of it. So, and there's a few little things I want to throw in there, like running up north face ridges of Ben Nevis. I think it's a really cool little challenge to do. And just, there's lots, this year is all about me being a bit more mobile. So there's a lot more adventures and stuff across the UK. But in terms of like main events, UTS Snowdonia, some sort of alpine trail running. I've got the Ard Rock Enduro, actually, mountain bike race, which I forgot about. That's in June, I think. And the 13 Valleys Ultra. So there's one or two things in the calendar for this year.
Oh, you got plenty on. And if Voom are sponsoring as well, I'm a big fan of Voom. That's who's got me through my last few events.
They are good.
Be spot on. They're very good. They're very good. Much. Yeah. Yeah. No, I've loved that chat, Ben. That's been spot on. I started the season with another ex-army chap, Carl Orme, and he is notorious for chucking himself into a challenge without training. And it's his mindset that gets him through. And it seems only fitting to wrap things up by another ex-army man who chucks himself into a challenge but prepares himself adequately. I think that's a great way to cycle through this season. So I can only thank you very much for coming on today, chatting to me, and wish you all the very best of luck with not only the challenges, but with other coaching going forward. And hopefully we can get a few people interested to get in contact with you.
You are most welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your day. And as I say, best of luck.
Thank you very much.
For the change, I had very little to do in that one. As with Omar Stanley Pissotas, Ben did all the heavy lifting and carried the conversation effortlessly. If it hadn't been for the technical hiccup, it would have been a flawless chat. Ben certainly helped instill a desire to get my butt out and achieving again after a few slower weeks, but also helped fan the fires that burn within me to get my very first Munro ticked off later in the year, just once the spring snow showers are done and out the way. So let's think about wrapping up for this season. If you've liked what you've heard today, the best way to support the podcast is to do what you've just done. To download, to stream, and to listen to the show. A quick share with your family and your friends, or a share on social media alongside a tag back to the show's page wouldn't go amiss either, and possibly a little review on either Spotify or Apple. They're just a few of the free ways that you can show your support for what I'm doing. If you'd like to show your physical support for the podcast, you can purchase a t-shirt from our merchandise partners over at Twisted Running. All proceeds stay with Twisted and help them grow the brand that's helping provide a valuable platform for collaboration for not just running groups and podcasts, but other individuals as well. The quality of their product is also top notch. I've said it in the past, I'm not getting paid to say it. I use my own money to buy the show's t-shirts, and I only have positive things to say about their quality and durability. You can find a direct link to the Twisted 99 page on our website, thepoint99podcast.com, or by Googling Twisted Running. Dropping them a follow on social media, especially Instagram, would also be a great thing to do. Right, the show, well, it's available on all your major podcast platforms. So if your friends or family don't like using Apple or hate using Spotify, there's always an alternative. You can also find every episode streamable on our website, the aforementioned thepoint99podcast.com, where we have an inbuilt player with every episode available. Finally, we're on both Instagram and Facebook. Just search for the Point 99 Podcast if you'd like to follow what I'm doing over there. If you want to get in contact, you can always leave a comment on any of the posts, drop a direct message to the show or to myself at Mr_Steve_Runs, or email the show at thepoint99podcast@gmail.com. Now that's a 99 in the middle there. But that's it for this season, or at least a couple of weeks while I get to grips with who I might be able to convince to come speak to me in season 5, if there will be a season 5 at all. I can't thank you all enough for tuning in this season. It's been a heck of a ride the past 10 weeks with some absolutely phenomenal guests. This is, after all, only a hobby for me at the end of the day, but you make it all the more enjoyable with your support, feedback, and love. If you feel you might miss the sound of my voice during the interval, however, never fear. I do have a second podcast out with a good friend of mine and an accomplished chef. It's meant to be predominantly about gaming, food, and fitness, but so far the first two episodes have been tangential, to say the least. Sounds familiar, right? It is a much longer format show that will either help tick some of your boxes or rattle your cage, but hopefully turn into a great trip all the same. Whether we're sharing recipes, cooking tips and hacks, or broadcasting our love for a certain film, TV show, band or game, it's a straight up conversation between two good friends in one room. Just search for the Good Food Gamers if you want to see what we're cooking up over there and see if it's something that might get your juices flowing. We have a Facebook group for feedback, chat and banter if that's your sort of thing. It's also available on all the main podcast platforms of choice. That's all, folks, though, for this week and this season. Until you hear from me again, big love, as always, from me, Mr. Steve. Stay safe, enjoy your runs, and maybe, just maybe, you'll hear from me soon.